podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Monday's edition of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. My name is Duncan Mackay and today I am joined by Craig Anderson.
Hello, how are you doing?
I am very well and that is it. It's just me and Craig. Tom Watt was due to be scheduled but he now can't join us. And it has apparently nothing to do with Saturday's result, but you know, we'll take it with a pinch of salt. Maybe he's been invited on to join the football advisory board at Aberdeen.
They could do worse.
So, and you'll notice that by it's our voices, that must mean that a view from the terrace is starting this Friday. Be ready to watch the television show from which came from this podcast. We'd be pretty amazed if you listen to this podcast and don't watch the show, but there we go. But that'll be back on Friday from half past 10. Hope you all give us a listen. But before that, let's talk about a thrilling weekend in the SPFL Premiership. It's our usual Monday roundup. It's Cheers prerogative to go with their team, but I think in this case, it's entirely justified because it's not often that a team wins 6-0 in the Premiership.
And it's certainly not often that Hibs beat Aberdeen 6-0 because it's never happened before. So
it was the first time. Yeah, I think it was the first time that Hibs had scored 6 at Easter Road since the 50s, maybe. I think Paul Mitchell had a stat around that, which feels remarkable. But then, surely must be league. I'm sure we've beaten. No, that actually can't be right because we've beat Livy in the league 7-0. But so, who knows? Right, it doesn't matter. Does not matter. The fact of the matter is, Aberdeen came down needing a performance, needing a result to save Jim Goodwin's tenure as manager. And that didn't happen. We, on the Patreon, Craig and I will be discussing the Aberdeen managerial situation. So we'll probably just focus on the match itself. And there was a lot to go with. I went out last minute to plans change and stuff, and I was able to go. And I've never been more delighted than a last minute decision to jump in the car and head to Easter Road. You just kind of had a feeling it was going to be something a bit special when walking alongside Aberdeen fans on the way to the ground, and they're just they're singing full voice, "We're fucking shit, we're fucking shit, we're fucking shit." And you take your seat, and there's already a Goodwin out banner. And if Aberdeen players were meant to deliver a performance, they forgot all about it. I think it was kind of remarkable, actually. Like me and Tony and Chris and a few others were at the game. Like I cannot remember watching a team chuck it. And that's what it was. Like I think a lot of people say, no, you know, confidence is a factor and stuff like that. That was in my mind just watching a team chuck it.
Yeah, there was incidents. Like there was the one, because I think Stuart's maybe one that you would say probably didn't down tools, he's just pish, but because there was an incident where I want to say it was Campbell just waltzed right through the Hibs defence, I think the Aberdeen defence right in the first half, and Campbell ended up, Stuart ended up making a kind of last-ditch tackle on him, and that was indicative of pretty much every goal in the second half, and probably the Campbell header as well in the first half. No attempt made to defend. There's bad defending and there's just we're just not going to do anything. And every single goal, probably after the first, had an element of that. Just someone half-arsing something. And that is, the manager shouldn't have survived past Monday's result. I don't think they downed tools on Monday. I think they were just bad. Personally, they maybe should have done more in an attacking sense, but they'd obviously just packed it in. Like, and that's a worry for whatever manager comes in, because it's always one of these situations. Can the next guy be trusted to actually, you know, if you've got a bunch of players who are going to go to that length to get a manager sacked,
why wouldn't they do it to
why
you?
Why wouldn't they do it to you?
Yeah.
And yeah, there's good pros there. Like, someone like Graham Shinney is not a player that you'd associate with doing something like that. He's
not immune to the bad performances. I mean, it's him switching off for Josh Campbell's second goal for the header. I mean, that's a really preventable goal. You know,
it's a wonderful header.
It's a great hit, like, and Joe Newell would love to do that all the time, but you cannot get away with, like, that should have easily been cut out by Shinney if he had had 1 second to have an awareness of where Josh Campbell was. It looks the more impressive because Campbell comes running in, but that's because he's got a completely unchecked run because Shinney doesn't look.
Yeah, exactly, and that was kind of a pattern that there was. Just a lack of anything from Aberdeen. And I think that Hibs losing 6-0, say they've lost 6-0 to Celtic, you can kind of pass that off as you're losing 6-0 to a good team. Hibs were in absolute disarray going into the game as well, into probably not the same type of disarray, if you know what I mean. Like, they've just had some bad but not shocking results, if you know what I mean. Hibs have just lost a lot of games, but they've not had anything of the sort of... Like, probably most of those games that Hibs lost, you would be like, oh yeah, Hibs could lose that game, whereas never in a million years would you say, obviously, that a Premiership club, one of the biggest clubs in the country, would lose to jumped up junior mob. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I know how much you've held your tongue there.
Darth Valar as well. They're not even like a big club in that scene. I know there's money there, but yeah. It wouldn't make it any better, but if you're like, oh, we've lost to Pollock or Auchinleck Talbot or Clyde Bank or something, it's like, well, people know who they are. I was watching it with my friend. We were away for work and we were sitting in the airport, and she watches a lot of football, and she was like, who's Darvel? Like, she's not into it as we are, the saddos that do this podcast, but it's not like she'd never heard of them. Obviously from Ayrshire, I do know them, but... best known for being the TV transmitter town than anything else.
Well, but was previously.
That's not a thing anymore. But to lose to a Hibs team who are and Hibs have got that in them, because I think Hibs are bad in the sense that they're being managed by someone who's a bit like off his head, and so occasionally you're going to get thumped because he just does weird things, but he's not like such a bad manager that he can't take advantage of, you know. He's managed at a high level, and I don't think Goodwin's a terrible manager either. I think it's just like
something's gone awry there, and I think that's exactly what's happened to Aberdeen. I mean, that was the weirdest thing, is to be 3-0 up at half time when you haven't really played that well. And I think that's a lot of Hearts fans said the same about the being 4-0 up at halftime in the game just 10 days ago. Quite remarkable that they've got that many goals, including one of those was just a 1-0 defeat in three games. But Hibs didn't play that well. I mean, the Hibs were much better in the second half, but you know, that first half there was the spine there of Will Fish, Jimmy Jago, and Joe Newell. That wasn't great. Like, you know, like Jago, I mean, Tony said this, he's seen him play two games and he's seen him kick the ball at the field. Like, you know, he is Alec Gogic for this team. Like, if you want him to break up play, I think he's going to be all right. If you want him to pass ball more than 3 yards, we might be struggling, but we have missed that player. So he will be of benefit rest of the season. But
I've got some advice for Hibs, which is, and I know you and Taylor would extend this to all the league, but there has been some success, but Hibs just really, really need to stop signing Australians. Like, Martin Boyle doesn't count because he was Scottish, and Jason Cummings the same. Obviously, but Mark Milligan, No. They had
Milligan
another
wasn't. Milligan was a. Well, I didn't think he was that bad.
There was another one at the same point, and then Miller, the right back you've got just now. He came on,
but again, there's nothing you're going to learn about a guy coming on. But he just looks like an athlete. He looks like an athlete more than he does a footballer, which I think will probably be borne out. But yeah, it was remarkable to be how the Hibs' current run of form. To be 3-0 up at halftime, not playing a much better second. I mean, I suppose one of the key differences is that Hibs have got Aidan McGeady looking like he's back to full strength, and what a luxury that is. Injuries you can't avoid, and so you just can't help but feel the season might have been a bit the season definitely would have been a bit different if you had the option of him and Boyle for any point of the season together. That would have been quite nice, just because McGeady is just, you can just see it. He wants to beat players, but he wants to do it with a purpose, which I think Juhan is starting to learn a little. Harry McCurdy is not. We've got three players that you can kind of look at the development of, like, what of skills, I suppose. But McGeady's is always so purposeful. Like, he buys himself through him to go and create something, as opposed to, oh, I can go back and beat this player again, or you know that. And if we can keep him fit, I think that's going to be that. I think that will be the difference between if we finish top six or not.
I'm just picturing that chart that you get in museums, and it's like the
evolution
going up to the man, and it's like so you've got McCurdy's like right at the bottom of it. Maybe you'll get there.
I think McCurdy has to do a lot, I think, to be in it. It's going to be remarkable if we get a return on investment on him, put it that way. He just doesn't have legs. Like, that's the problem. Like, he's got sticks for as legs, and that's it. But what was most surprising for me was, Aberdeen came in the second half, booed back onto the park, Sean McGuigan favourite. And I was expecting some sort of reaction. And actually, the second half, Hibs weren't particularly threatening, I would say, but we controlled the game in a much better fashion than we did in the first half. Now, you could say that's the advantage of being 3-0 up and being able to play a bit and stuff, but everyone was a lot more composed, and you're just looking at that team, and it just falls apart. Like, Liam Scales is awful. I think Ross McCrory is completely the victim of his versatility. He can't, like, he's never good, like, until he gets a fixed position, he's never going to be able to get to the levels that he should. Like, there's clearly talent there. I think it's clear to see, and I think they are making moves in the transfer market. Lewis has finished in goals. I think a better keeper doesn't spill that for the first goal, and then maybe it's a bit too harsh.
Nah. I thought the first time I was like, I don't think he's to blame there. And then you watch it, I think his starting position is not very good, which means he has to, like, rather than being able to make a more comfortable save, he has to dive away over to get it. And a really good finish from Campbell. Like, it's not, you know, people look at it as an open goal, but the angle and stuff. I'm really pleased for him, because I know he got a bit of stick, and maybe he's not the best footballer, but he is an athlete and he runs a lot. And I've said a lot, like, that goes a long way in this league, being able to run around and follow managers' instructions are two key.
I think to do that when you've kind of been a bit of a boo boy as well, like, is kind of, you just don't react to it, and you don't, like, he then goes and plays the next game in very much the same manner as he's been told to do. I think I put in the group chat earlier as well, the fact that Jack Ross, Sean Maloney and Lee Johnson have all rated him quite highly, either says there's something there, or it says a lot about who Hibs have been appointing as managers and their evaluation of talent. But no, like, there's facets of his game that he knows probably himself he can improve on. But again, his versatility has sometimes counted against him, that he can get shunted. You know, he's played right back at points this season, and you know that what sort of midfielder are you wanting them to be? Are you wanting them to be a sitting midfielder? And you know, he always seems to have better performances against the bigger teams, aside from Saturday, where he was able just to run the show, albeit a hat trick. It was a penalty, the third one. But I mean, yeah, it was nice also to be able to bring on Nisbet and for him to get a reaction straight away. And the build up to that goal is Campbell's Ewan to Campbell to Nisbet, and Nisbet just going 1-on-1 with a keeper. You're sure he's going to finish, and that's not something that I used to say about him, and also something that you can't not say about every goal scorer in the Premiership, as we'll probably get to this weekend.
There's some players who I would distinctly fancy less in a 1-on-1 than I would like 30 yards out. There's many of them actually.
Kind of the more time I got to think about, it was just a very, very, by the end of it, 6-0, Will Fish is scoring. Will Fish is making a tackle with his back when he's on the ground. As Tony said, like in his nature, like his nominative determinism, as you went there. There was a pitch invader that ran the whole length of the pitch to go and speak to Kevin Nisbet. We thought he was going to take the penalty. David Marshall, for some reason, decides to boot the ball into the Aberdeen. Liam Scales gets himself sent off again. Gary O'Connor's son comes on and wins us a penalty. The fact that we're able to bring on Josh O'Connor and Oscar McIntyre and which speaks volumes, because Johnson is not there's been a lot of criticism from Hibs fans about this fabled youth academy that we've got coming in. It's always difficult, isn't it? Because the proof of the pudding's always in the tasting, but I'm not entirely convinced that it's necessarily a golden generation like we have been. And usually your golden generations are the ones that you didn't know they were any good until they kind of broke through by accident more than anything than design. But the fact that they were able to get a game was kind of telling as well, that Johnson felt so relaxed he could bring on those players, which he's not really trusted to do so far. And then I think, yeah, the Will Fish goal, to make it to finish it off, you have just chucked it at that stage. It was kind of no. It's difficult to say how good Hibs were, because Aberdeen were so abject, and that's what's cost Jim Goodwin his job, that he clearly didn't have them playing for them.
Yeah, and that little sad momentum from walking across the pitch. It's like, it seems like a nice guy, Goodwin, and you feel a bit sorry for him, but again, he won't be out of work for long, and he'll have made a fair bit from his time at Aberdeen, so I don't think you can feel that sorry for him.
No, I don't think so. I think that's kind of it. We'll get on to what the hell is going on at Aberdeen in the Patreon, which you can subscribe to for as little as £2 a month. I think do you mind if we go to Dingwall next, Craig? In terms of, it was probably the other notable result of the weekend in terms of County starting to put something together, maybe. Or is it just the fact that Kelly hate going up there?
We hate going up there. I mean, I went and saw us win up there, but that was like a decade ago. So I think we won there in 2017, which I don't even remember. I think I was maybe still in Australia at the time, and we've not since. Even Steve Clark couldn't get a win up there. Didn't lose, obviously, but because he never lost anyone that was not Aberdeen, Hibs, Rangers or Celtic, I think. But I go in real cycles with this Kelly team, because I think I said in the summer I was fairly confident, because I thought, you know what, last season's team were rubbish, but we'll probably ship a few of them out, get some new guys in. And then what happened? We couldn't get rid of the players, and we ended up having to make all of these kind of scrambled together last minute loan signings and guys, you know, it wasn't good joined up recruitment, because I don't think they were able to. And then we've brought in recruitment and then we started the season really badly. And then, do you know what, after October to January, kind of thought, do you know what, we are not that bad. We are winning a lot of games at home. I think only Livingston, Rangers and Celtic have won at Rugby Park this season in the league. So you're starting to think, do you know what, there's something there. We just need to get those. We just need to stay in touch until January and then we'll do a bit of business in January. We've got the cup semi-final money to help with that. That should probably do us. We'll be all right. We'll stay up. But we're now on the 30th of January. We've just made our second signing of the window, but it doesn't look like we're going to get the business that I thought we would get done this month either. I think our only potential saving grace is that we have been really good at home and that there are other teams who are, I mean, there's four of us on 20 points now. We only need to be better than two of them. And then there's St Johnston, obviously hovering 4 points above that as well, who are certainly not out of it. But it's hard to watch a performance like the one on Saturday and have any confidence at all in your team because every aspect of it was just terrible. And yeah, I mean, Ross County deserve a bit of credit, but I don't think they had to work that hard for the win because you look at the first goal, they've got a 3-on-2 after 11 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to ask how did you feel when you... I mean, I suppose the consolation you could take is that the first goal feels like a clear mistake, like, you know, the something's gone awry. And then also the third goal is an undoubted individual error. So,
over and over again.
Like, yeah, you remove them and you're all right. But
Well, sort of, but I go back to our Arbroath game where we won the league last season. They scored a goal where they had like a 3-on-1, like 10 minutes into the game. And it's like, why is this still happening? It's been happening pretty much for the last 3 years. Mm. Like, what's going on? Like, why have we suddenly, like, Steve Clarke would never have conceded a 3-on-2 or a 3-on at any point in a game unless you were, like, you know, 1-0 down and chasing it. But
yeah,
it's just a complete lack of game discipline. And this is the thing, we're talking about Aberdeen and their players chucking it. There is no doubt in my mind, there is not a single Kelly player has chucked it in any sense. I think even with that performance, there's capitulations, but it's a capitulation because they're not very good. They're trying their best and they're being found out a lot. And that's obviously very different. It's probably more fixable, but I keep expecting it to be fixed and it's not. And like it's not helped. I had very much been on the boat that Zach Hemming should be playing. He should be the first choice goalkeeper because I think Walker's been all right, but he doesn't make saves you don't expect him to make. That's what I've always said. He's like a solid, he's like a perfect backup to me.
Yeah.
And Hemming last season looked to me like he was going to be a really good goalkeeper going forward, obviously young, but you saw why Hemming's not playing. That third goal was
a disaster. Horrendous. You even make an argument in the second he should do better, given how close to the six-yard box.
He's like a fullback playing in goals.
Yeah.
So you've got that Callum Waters playing left back in 2023 in the Premiership. No, Callum Waters could play left back in a good team where the other 10 were like, he was back up to Greg Taylor. Greg Taylor was hardly ever injured in like the 3 games he had to play. You're like, oh, Callum Waters was all right there because everyone else was good around him. But ever since then, he's not been. And obviously, Chris N, who is pretty decent enough left back, is out kind of long term now. On top of that, Dorset, who's a kind of left sided centre half left back, who's also on loan, also not available. So you're starting to lose your left side options. We have signed a left back from Liverpool today, who I assume will go straight into the team, to be honest. Youngster on loan. Centre halves, I think, to be honest, like, they're not brilliant. I think we're all right with centre halves. right back, yeah. But then it's a midfield, like Power's been okay. Polworth, you just wouldn't want him in the trenches. Like, he's surprised this season, but you see that first goal, he's trying to look for a foul. That's what he's doing. He's trying to buy a foul rather than defend. And I put a lot of blame on him for that first goal. And then, yeah, up front, we have lots of forwards. None of them are doing very much at the moment. I think Lafferty's been written off by a few of our supporters a bit too early because I think he was carrying an injury at the start of the season and grew into it, and then he's obviously just back after a big spell out. Mm-hmm. I kind of think he's got something to offer, but don't know about the rest. So you're just looking at bits and pieces of a squad. Obviously Armstrong being suspended for that game didn't help.
Doesn't help, you know, definitely not, yeah.
he'll be back. I would certainly have him and Jones in the team for Dundee United in midweek. I think we've looked at our best when we've had two wingers in the team. But there's been a lot of players that we've used a lot of players this season, and not very many of them have been good enough. I've said it for all we need to do is finish 10th, annihilate the squad, and start again in the summer with some proper recruitment. We're able to do that in the sense that pretty much everyone, with the exception of two or three, most of whom you'd want to keep anyway, are away in the summer, like they're out of contract or whatever. If we stay
you've just got to stay up. 10th, that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'll take 11th in a playoff, I'd just rather not, because I don't fancy them to win one. But so there's that. Ross County, Brophy and White's a decent partnership, and that could be good. I think they're still the same problems. Like, obviously, we didn't test them defensively, but to be honest, in that game, they scored early. They probably were the better team for the first half of the first half, and then up until half time, Killie were on top and should have scored.
Two great chances, isn't there, really?
And again, wastefulness. And then it kind of fell apart for us, which it has done a few times away from home when it's gone badly. But that's the issue. But County, I think, are in the same boat, if they're honest, in terms of, like, most of the players aren't good enough. So they're still going to win some games, as we all are, but
is it going to be enough? Yeah.
Is it going to be, like, I still probably have them as favourites to finish bottom, but at the same time, winning games 3-0 at home is probably how you start to climb the table.
Yeah, I suppose so. I think the next game we'll go and look at is another one of the four that is now stuck on 20 points, which is, I don't ever remember it being that kind of tight this late into the season.
I can't remember it either.
And you could make the argument that St Johnstone could potentially be snared in that, especially with both Motherwell and Dundee United having a game in hand.
Games in hand count for a lot less at the bottom, Duncan. Damage your goal difference as much as anything.
So I think the next game to look at is St Mirren defeating Motherwell 1-0, and I kind of just wrote down in my notes when I was watching the highlights from this game was sort of a game that just absolutely sums up where both clubs are at the moment in terms of, like, St Mirren can play, and I think that in Saturday's game did demonstrate it. I mean, it can be a pain in the arse to a team that they perceive as being bigger than them, but that they can play. They've always had this problem for the last few years, and I think that's what will ultimately could potentially be the difference between them getting that top six finish or not, is that they rarely batter a team. That's not fair. They can batter teams, but they don't ever deliver a thrashing that often. And you kind of think Motherwell at the moment where could have been that team, and yet it was still 1-0, and how ridiculous football is, and that Motherwell still having a bit of I was going to say X factor, and Kevin Van Veen, it kind of feels not more like half an X factor, they get the goal fairly early on with Curtis Main. It's a scrappy goal.
It's a terrible goal we concede. It's like, it's exactly what you expect Main to score, but if you're Motherwell to concede like something so shit as that, like...
Yeah, and I think the news tonight coming out is that it looks like that was Ethan Erhon's last game. I think he's off to Lincoln for around about 150,000. That it's difficult to see if that's good money and stuff, but you just hate the idea of, like, good Scottish players going to clubs like Lincoln. That is meant to sound disrespectful to any lower league English fan listening. I suppose there's a bigger factor around Ethan Erhon is that the player I think he is we've never seen it enough. This will be the making of him.
One that needs a different environment and stuff like that, because I felt like that red card he got at Rugby Park after about 30 seconds or whatever it was, when he just was supposedly about to be going to Forest Green, I'm like, you just don't want to be here anymore. it kind of felt like that. And yeah, I think there's some players that just need the step away to see how good they are, because I think he probably was getting... There's things about them that make me think his attitude might be what's needed to be sorted out rather than his ability. Because I think there's a bit, I know it's the same club, but it's a kind of natural, lazy comparison. But Kenny McLean's the one he always kind of reminds me a bit of. And obviously, if he can have half the career McLean's gone on and half, then he'll be doing well. But that it will be a bit of a blow for them to lose a midfielder nonetheless. But
they seem to be getting better at recruitment, though. I would say that's the difference now.
They're taking, I mean, someone like Derek McInnes got criticised and still gets criticised, and probably correctly, for predominantly look in the Scottish market, and I've just been buying kind of, or signing, sorry, not buying, because no one however buys anyone, but signing established Premiership players, and it's worked really well for them, because they've now built a team that's got a lot of the right attitude that you need to succeed at this level. And, you know, guys like Maine are not fashionable players. Charles Dunn, not a fashionable player, but they still do exactly what you want them to do. And yeah, that probably loses you that X factor sometimes of, like, you know, these guys that are going to come in and be amazing and you're going to get £1 million for them. But these guys are so rare anyway that you're sometimes better off. But they have dipped, unlike what McInnes doesn't do. They have still dipped into other markets. They got Backes, which has turned out to be an absolute one of the signings this season. Strain, likewise, really good pickup. Who and what their connection is to be doing this, I don't know, but that they've obviously got someone that's really, either they've got very lucky, or because maybe they have, because some of the other guys have brought in the summer weren't very good, but there's that lovely blend in the recruitment. They are a pain to play against. I would like, that's exactly the way I want my team to play, is how St Mirren play. It's not for everyone, but I just want my team to be arseholes that everyone hates, and that's I think true of that group of players. You don't like them in the 90 minutes you play against them, and then you go away and you're like, do you know what? That they're a good team.
Yeah, yeah. I think we'd be very interested to see how they how Hibs deal with that, because obviously that was the game last season where people started to think that maybe Lee Johnson wasn't the Messiah. Some of us were already on that, well on that bandwagon, but
I know it's for a good cause and stuff, but that Motherwell strip is honking. It's absolutely disgusting. That was my main comment on them. Over and over again, they just don't contribute to games. I know it's not in the same way that I know Tony's talked about St Johnstone, where they don't even attempt to contribute to games. And at times, I don't think that's true St Johnstone weekend, yeah. But has been sometimes. But they if you told me what did Motherwell do in this game, I'd be like, well, they had a couple of shots and could have had a penalty, which I am more than happy not to be given, because it's just a tango in the box. But I couldn't really go beyond that, and that would be a worry for me. It's like you're not creating chances, you're not creating enough time. When you're 1-0 down, you're not besieging an opponent's goal, slinging balls into the box, whatever it has to be. That's the thing I've been reading. Their fans are very pessimistic at the moment about where they're going, but I think you could say the same for all of the bottom four, because I think most fans lack the perspective of, like, they just see their own team being shite and their own travails and don't think, well, actually, there are three other teams.
That, I think you're right. I think that when you look at Motherwell, it just feels like it's just they're trying to do the same thing year after year, but the what's happened to the club has kind of been things have been salami sliced, if you know what I mean. Like, so it's not noticeable that you lose, but it is noticeable in the degree, like, you lose someone like David Turnbull, yeah, like that isn't hugely noticeable and stuff like that. But they've not, you know, every good player has been replaced by someone just marginally a bit worse, and like, you know, and there's not been any of that, like, reinvestment, and you've seen the benefits, like the flowers coming through the roots or whatever. Like, you know, there's not any of that. It just seems that we have replaced a 7 out of 10 with a 6.5 out of 10.
Yeah, and then
you do that over six or seven positions, you're suddenly like that actually becomes a deficit, and there's not been a change up. I mean, I think that obviously Alan Burrows is leaving,
but it's such a small, that
would be a worry.
It's especially
this is how clubs unravel, isn't it?
There's not been a story around that because I saw he was leaving. I was like, oh, he's got a job somewhere else, or you know, he's relocating, or he's just decided. Maybe that is the case. He's just decided, you know, it's too much for someone to do, because he was a real asset to Motherwell, like absolutely was, because it's so rare to have
someone who can explain things.
Yeah, but someone,
who's a fan as well.
A fan who's in that club, who understands. There's fans who don't understand how other fans think, don't understand what makes a football club tick, and he understood all of that. And yeah, they can find someone else, but he was also like smart and also had his ear to the ground quite well. And these people are not easy to replace. And that would worry me as well in terms of like, you know, Kelly have got an owner and a board whose hearts are in the right place, who have got the money behind it, but they make some questionable decisions. And it's very easy to have people like that. And I think the model that they have, because they won't have the cash behind them, that you know, at least if our chairman makes another bad decision, he'll probably throw £500,000 at it afterwards, like to fix it. But that's the concern.
Yeah, when you're fan owned, you don't have that luxury.
I always assume Motherwell were going to be okay because they're Motherwell, and I've never seen them play in the second tier, but I always assume Kelly were going to be okay, and then we got relegated, so I don't know what to think now.
Yeah, I think Motherwell in the second tier would kind of turn up a lot of people's it would mess with a lot of people's heads, because yeah, they've been. I was reflecting; it's been 31 years since my first game at Easter Road just this week, and yeah, I was like, "Oh right." And there are very few clubs, and Motherwell is a Motherwell. It must be a Motherwell, Aberdeen, and Celtic, and Rangers. Yeah,
Rangers.
Oh, Rangers even. Yeah. Oh, geez, oh.
You played them in the second tier. Yeah,
I know. I always put them together, and seamlessly, just like we're about to do now, because there's nothing more exciting than a title race where both teams expect to win and do win every single weekend. Rangers beat St Johnstone 2-0 at Ibrox on Ewan Taylor's favourite game of the year, Armed Forces Day. If you don't know the story about behind that, go and ask him someday. It's very funny. And perfunctionary like that. Yeah. I think that's like, you know, I suppose Michael Beale will be delighted they didn't concede a stupid goal. But aside from that, like what more can you really say about a game?
They've not played. The only time they've played well since Beale took over that I've seen was against Celtic, which was the only game they didn't win. I was speaking to my friend when we were watching the Aberdeen game and we were on our work trip, and she was saying, like, I was asking her, is that the case? And she's like, pretty much. And I mean, it's better than being shit under Van Bronckhorst and not winning all your games to being shit and still winning.
But yeah, you're kind of hoping it's got like, to turn at some stage. Yeah,
at some point, either the performances get better or the results get worse. Like, I don't think this is sustainable like that. Maybe it doesn't matter because they're unlikely to finish anywhere other than second this year anyway. But still, two cups to win as well. The penalty. I've been outspoken about VAR, but I think I'm open-minded. I went to the SFA kind of event. Mm-hmm. They're obviously trying to encourage people to be, you know, understand the process that's going on with VAR, understand what's happened. My problem is you cannot get buy-in from anyone when week after week decisions like that on handball, which are just simply wrong, are being made. Mm. That's not, to me, even an opinion-based decision. The penalty, it wasn't quite as bad as the penalty Celtic got against Morton the week before, but it's two decisions that just wrong. It's not in both cases. The player's arm is not by their side, but in both cases the ball came off an opponent at very close range, and in both cases the player's arm was clearly not there to try
cause
to
an
stop
obstruction.
The ball.
Yeah.
It was a natural action that was, you know, now you can argue, not in Ambrose's case, that was very, very natural. And that's why I said it's not as bad. Yeah, it's a bit weird, I would say, that his arm's out by his side, but it's a leverage thing. It's just not a penalty. Mm. The difference and another reason I don't think it's as bad a decision. I still think it's a terrible decision, don't get me wrong. The referee gave it life, right? He pointed to the spot. And once he's done that, it's obviously a wee bit harder to clear the bar for it being wrong. But it was wrong. Yeah. It should have been overturned. That to me, you're not going to get people to believe in any system. You can't win faith in VAR, which fans are already against, when there's just mistakes. And I don't want to be talking about it, but that's just wrong. The other two decisions in the game, right, both of them could have gone the other way. But yeah. It's like, and it's obviously especially egregious when they both go the same way in the same team's favour. But like, if that had happened if any of those had happened in a single incident in Ross County v Killy, I don't think even they'd have been discussed that much, other than people saying, I think that was wrong. Mm-hmm. Obviously, those in combination with that penalty decision, you can understand why people are a bit like. But for Nicky Clark's one, the first angle I saw, I saw someone sharing a clip of it on Twitter, and I think I shared it in our group chat, and they were saying, oh, this is a dreadful decision. And from that clip I watched, I'm like, this is a red card, right? Like, from that clip, his leg goes straight. You see one, it's only when you see the one behind Clark where I think his raised leg actually kind of, is it Ryan Jack the tackle's on, kind of goes between his legs. So it's actually probably not as dangerous as it looks. But
it's still done. It's still done at speed, and it is.
I don't want that to be a red card. I don't think it should be a red card. I don't think there's any actual danger to the player. But I would actually say the same for Ryan Jack's tackle. I suppose the
only difference I would say is in Nicky Clark's. I mean, this is difficult because you're projecting onto the situation. I don't think I think Clark's was clumsy. Wasn't Jack's premeditated. Jack's is malicious and premeditated. And I mean, the thing about Ryan Jack and all that, like, I mean, I think that's a coward's challenge as well. That's exactly his shtick, isn't it? Like, it's this faux hard man act that he doesn't.
I like him. I think he's a great player, but
he doesn't need to do. Like, it's an element of his game that he doesn't need to. Like, he's a perfectly adequate footballer, good at what he does, without the need to lean into this sort of, like, you're not a hard man. Like, look at you. You're built like the gable end of a fiver. Like, there's no need for it. And it's that sort of thing that just detracts from people ever liking him. But I mean, I suppose he's living in probably, his bank balance would, and everything about his life would probably suggest he doesn't really care about what we think, what we jobbers think about him. But thinking at the same time,
he signed for Rangers where he got like four red cards in the first season at Rangers. But the thing that worries me, or not worries me, the Clark red card, is not clear to me at all what the decision making process was there, because
he took over a minute, didn't he?
Now I mean, first of all, maybe he's just making sure that the player gets treatment first, which is what you're meant to do. Rather, you know, your attention as a ref first should be the safety of the player before brandishing a card. But it wasn't that. All I can think of is that the on field officials, like maybe the fourth official or one of the assistants, has had a word in his ear and said, you know what, I think that's a red card.
And that's which we saw in the FA Cup yesterday when there was not VAR and in one of those games. Yeah.
So that is a possibility, because the alternative, which with the vacuum of information, again, people are saying, well, VAR told him in his ear that it was a red card. But that's not the process.
You're hoping that's not the case. Again, the absence of any proactive explanation means that it's a vacuum is filled.
The other one, like, I actually don't have an issue with the Jack decision on the basis of, like, in isolation of, he looks at that tackle, thinks it's a yellow card, he goes over to the monitor, he's like, happy with that, move on. In isolation, it's the fact he was the first in up so far only to do that, I think, in Scottish football, as far as I can remember. But
was it bad enough tackle that it should have been given as a penalty to St Johnstone?
No, it certainly wasn't a penalty to St Johnstone. I think we can safely say that. But it's weird because the first time I saw, I can understand why Mark Ryan was the first time I saw the clip. But you watch these clips in isolation, you're like, it's in the box. I was almost like, what, did he not even give a foul for that? And didn't, but yes. But I don't think the bar's, that there should be a bar of overturning decisions. And that's what I mean with both of those red card decisions. I could get on board with the bar not being cleared in either direction once the decision's been made. The penalty, though, it's just wrong. It's just, I know I'm sounding like Chris Sutton or something, it's just not the correct decision. And I don't know why handball is being interpreted differently in the Scottish Premiership or in Scottish football to anywhere else. And you didn't see handballs being given for that at the World Cup, with the exception of the Ronaldo one, which the Portugal against Uruguay, where everyone pretty much agreed that it wasn't a penalty, and actually ended up putting Uruguay out on goal difference. Mm-hmm. So like these things do matter, but that's my take on that game. There's nothing else to talk about. Rangers, St Johnstone played well in this game. Dre Wright should have levelled it up.
The line I wrote down is Dre Wright will do that to you.
Yeah.
He will get himself in brilliant positions and then piss it away.
How you can be a man up and a goal up and leave someone in that position to be able to run through and go at that time in the game, I do not know, but it was a bad miss. But St Johnstone played well. The back four seems to be doing well for them so far. I mean, it's only been a couple of games and they did still lose them both, but there might be something there for them. I think their fans are a bit more optimistic, but I think we've lost seven games in a row, so there's only so far that optimism will go if they don't turn that round.
I think Wednesday they're away to Motherwell. I think
I don't want to watch that game, I will tell you that much. I'll very happily be at Rugby Park watching Kilmarnock win Dundee.
I was like, I've worked out what it is we're doing on Thursday show. We're covering the midweek Premiership games. There we go. Glenn Kamara gets an easy finish for 2-0, and that's it. The other title contenders, the favourites, Celtic won 2-0 at Dundee United in the late game on Sunday. Several thoughts came to my mind when watching this game was, why is it? I mean, I know why they televised it, because they thought they were hoping that there'd be a repeat of what happened last time they were televised, but that wasn't, that don't think that was ever going to happen.
It was such a one-sided game.
It was 88% possession for Celtic in the first half. I know where they do get the joy from, but I don't know if you're an Old Firm fan this weekend, where you get your joy from football. I laughed my socks off at the football on Saturday. I don't think that's ever really happened to a Celtic and Rangers fan, aside from when these scuds one another. Celtic, without becoming a show about VAR, Celtic fans absolutely indignant in the first half about VAR, suddenly very quiet in the second half about VAR, as ever. We're all football fans. We're all hypocrites. Just accept you're a hypocrite.
In that game, at least. I don't think you could disagree with any either of them.
It's a weird one, that the fact it was given as a penalty in the first place. But I suppose you could make the argument that is VAR doing its job as the referee. If he's in two minds, I can give it, and I'll be told if I've got it wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know if that is the case, that needs to be communicated to fans as well and things like that, as opposed to this.
When I saw it live, I thought, that might be a penalty.
Mm.
So I can understand why he gave it, because it was only when you saw the replay, kind of the second angle, that you can see he very clearly comes and takes the ball. And yes, after he makes contact with the ball, his other arm makes contact with the Celtic player. But that if two players are challenging for a ball, the one who wins the ball is going to continue on. He didn't come out full speeding, Schumacher, Battiston,
Clatter.
It was a 50-50 with two players, and contact will happen in those. So it was the right decision not to give the penalty. It was the right decision to give the penalty. Probably should have been a second yellow. Found that odd, but it's something.
I think it was instinctive rather than intentional, which I know not people necessarily want to give it that many allowances, but I think that his hand went out in a panic rather than thinking, I've put my hand out here to stop the, like, it was, yeah, I think that's why it wasn't a second yellow, but again, those are the rules.
I think one of the challenges that they talked about over and over again when we went to the VAR session was basically when you're given like that one big decision, because obviously given the penalty is in itself the big decision,
yeah,
it can be easy to forget to communicate or, you know, think about the other part. You see it all the time.
That's completely understandable, actually, yeah.
You saw it before VAR as well. The amount of times, especially like a controversial penalty gets given or something that, you know, you're so worried about, you know, as a referee, worried about showing that you're confident in your decision, and you're telling the players to back off, and you're kind of trying to adopt a confident pose and all the rest of it that you kind of do.
Or if a melee ensues and things like that.
It's a penalty and you can forget. But that, I mean, that's not an excuse. That's again why VAR's there, because that's meant to be the cam head sitting, the two of them sitting there. But anyway, not impactful on the game in any sense.
Well, certainly not after Berghetti had another. Just as you think he's getting better, he goes and does something that you're like, oh yeah, maybe not. And they were trying to make allowances on the radio in the analysis around that maybe they weren't expecting Moy to cross from there. I would suggest you should be expecting Celtic to cross from wherever. Jota and his silly little moustache will never have an easier finish in, well, I can say that, like, a Matt player of that
talent. We wouldn't have scored that.
I wouldn't have scored that, yeah, absolutely. I would. That was definitely going back to Aaron Moy. I think it must be, you'd be frustrated if you were Dundee United, because you'd done so well at holding that out, and then, to be defeated by such a basic error is just a bit rubbish.
I think there's been some games this season where teams you've thought they're frustrating Celtic here. I didn't really get that vibe from the game. It felt like it was a matter of time anyway, but the matter of time can, you know, you might as well extend the matter of time and then you never know what happens. There's not much more to say, because it was so one-sided. Celtic were very good. You can't take that away from them, but it's just, would you expect them to be very good at this point?
It's just, forgive my absolute ignorance on this, did the clubs all agree for the extra sub rule?
Yes.
That's insanity if you're anyone that's not Celtic and Rangers, because you just look at what Celtic are able to bring off the bench and just the possibilities that gives them. Dundee United do not have the possibility to change the game with their fourth, with their 15th best player. Celtic absolutely do. It's nuts.
I think one of the arguments was probably about like getting fresh legs on the park, which can help in these situations. But
I think once in a blue moon.
It seemed odd to me as well. But
it's kind of just writing your own death warrant.
It's not like VR where I'm like, oh, this is, because to me it doesn't actually visibly
an adjustment rather than a fundamental change.
But I don't see what's in it for clubs, and most clubs don't use five because they don't have five, to be honest, as you said.
It's one of those adjustments that you see, like Serie A clubs are forced to name two goalkeepers on the bench, and you're like,
Who's
benefiting out of this? Terrace rules dictate that if a game finishes 0-0, it is last on the schedule, and Livingston and Hearts served up a 0-0 at the Tony Macaroni. You know a team has not got a result at Livingston when their players, managers and fans are all talking about the pitch, and lo and behold, yes, that is exactly what shouldn't he be having these pitches in this league? It's a disgrace. I was like, well,
I mean, first of all, they're there.
So what can you do about them?
The clubs did vote for them at some point.
Like, I know.
but anyway, I was going to say we'll probably not hear many complaints from Kelly next week. I was thinking because of the result, but obviously also because that would be even. If I was Derek McInnes, I would be leaning in, but.
Just a wink, yeah. So
I was like, our tweet after we won the league was something like a fairy tale on our hallowed turf or something, or it no, was it was like, it was something that was like about grass almost, and but no,
aye.
This game was it wasn't terrible in terms of like there was like enough to keep you engaged with it, but there was no quality. It was one of the lowest quality games I've seen in a very long time. Summed up, I would say, by Garang Kuol's miss, which to me is like, I've never seen a player go through in that situation and just decide to just side foot it to the goalkeeper. Like, I don't know what he thought he was going to do.
Yeah.
He played at the World Cup.
It'll be the surface. That's the surface, eh? There's not a great deal to say about this. I think Nielsen tried to ring the changes a little, which is sort of understandable because he doesn't really want complacency I think as soon as complacency settles into a club they only aren't that far ahead and stuff like that. Like it's. So I think you want to shuffle the pack, but also that Hart squad is actually, if everyone comes back from injuries, is absolutely massive. So you need to worry about that. And I think Martindale and Livy will be happy about just not getting beat. I mean, I think Martindale's been quite vocal. You're never sure if he's at it when he's playing up how difficult things are for Livy, but he's saying, you know, that they've got a 200 grand shortfall because of various things, including VAR. It's like, well, again, you voted for it. Like I'm not like you absolutely voted for it. You knew how much it was going to cost. I'm not sure how you're budgeting. I'll probably stop commenting there about Livingston's financial arrangements. Martindale's always going to lean into that side of Livy being the underdogs and kind of being the dogs of war and stuff like that. And I think that's as long as they're not getting beat off Hearts and stuff and being competitive. If they can make top six, which I think they really have. It's within their capability, I suppose, unless a Barry Robson supercharged Aberdeen start storming up, making things difficult.
I think they're the fourth best team in the league. Hibs at Aberdeen could turn it around, and St Mirren are the only other ones, I think, in that equation to finish fourth, to be honest. And why not? They are able to do that to you because they're all over the pitch. They've got players who are pests who annoy you. They defend well, but they can play. And you didn't see a lot of that, to be honest, yesterday. But I know that both teams are capable a lot better. The Cairo's clearance off the line is as good as a goal. It was absolutely fantastic. That wins them a point because I think that game finishes 1-0. I don't know when Hearts were going to score if they conceded there. Clark probably had his poorest game since he came back or came into the Hearts team, but he did still keep a clean sheet. What else is there to comment on?
Not on the park, but I think the huge Hearts away support, as much as it pains me to praise Hearts, like there is something going on there around being connected to your club and playing well and the fact that you now have a waiting list for season tickets and stuff like that, and I think football is remarkable in that because the cost of living crisis is pretty extreme, and the fact that Hearts are still the Scottish clubs.
Every club appears to be
inelastic to this says a lot about football, but also I think, yeah, is why probably potentially why clubs take advantage of fans, yeah, as well, because they'll they know they'll get they can get away with it because we're addicted to this thing.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I was really looking forward to this game more so than the other one, because I thought, yeah, you know, this has got a bit of potential, and it never really kicked off in that respect. But yeah, these Hearts will finish third. Livy, I think, will finish fourth, to be honest. And fair play to both, I think, on that. But the game was dull. I didn't have any notes on it, like, beyond. Like, yes, you know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. There was some very bad misses. Oda for Hearts, right, I think, that wasn't his finest hour, but I think I saw a couple of things in him where I'm like, you can see how I think he was called the Japanese Mbappe when he came in, and you can see, like, he's quick and he's quite sharp as well. He maybe just needs just to learn what a football is, and he'll be good.
But clubs are hostages to fortune on making any reference, comparing someone that comes from a minor nation to a world-class footballer. Never ends well. Yeah. Never ends well. Stop doing it. But yeah, I suppose it's the romantic in all of us. But Craig, thank you very much. That's been a whistle stop tour, really, of the six engaging and enthralling encounters we had in the Premiership this week. I know that I'm back on Thursday, I think, with Gary and Tony, and we'll be discussing the midweek fixtures. There we go. Can just about say that. But as ever, if you want to get in touch with the show, just send us a DM or tweet us or whatever. And you can sign up to our Patreon, where there's a podcast a day going up with different things all about Scottish football, sometimes around culture. But some of it's really good. No, actually, all of it's really good.
Every single podcast is seven or eight out of ten.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, you're not gonna. I'm not gonna Craig Telfer's, and I can say what I like about Craig Telfer. He doesn't listen to this end of this part of the show, but I'm not gonna do down the product. But yes, that's patreon.com/terracepodcast. And a reminder, as I said at the start of the show, the television show that is adapted from this podcast, A View from the Terrace, returns to BBC Scotland and the iPlayer from Friday night. So Craig, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome, and thank you to all the listeners for listening.
Yes, and we are away to record a Patreon about Aberdeen, and maybe for the second time in 2 weeks, laugh at them a little bit. Sorry for about this, Dons fans, because we know
quite a lot of you
contribute to the Patreon as well. But hopefully, it's done in a respectful.
Yeah, there's insight. Enjoy your football and do so respectfully, or whatever the hell it was.
Yes. New catchphrase that is not going to take off. Thank you very much, and we'll see you all later on.
Podcast Network.